VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the VanWee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam VanWee.
It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And I want to welcome everybody. You can put away your winter coats because I think it's warming up again after hell froze over officially this past week. The Chicago Cubs won the World Series.
In spectacular fashion, no less.
Yay.
Alan is not an unbiased observer of such things. And quite frankly, I detest baseball. It's boring and awful and all that. But hey, that's just me. But even I was interested in this one. How can you not be? Especially if you grew up close to Chicago. So it was really quite cool. They had a nice parade yesterday. Congratulations to all involved. You waited a long time for that. All right, let's get started. Welcome, everybody. If you're a regular, we appreciate you being here. As always, that's why we come in and do the show. But if you're new or just driving around or somebody's told you about it or you're flipping through channels, stick around for a while. Hopefully, over the course of the hour, you'll pick up some good advice either from us or from callers. I do want to remind everybody, as I do at this time on Saturdays, that unlike most financial talk shows, you can actually control the content by picking up the phone and dialing 222-8255, area code 904, and we'll talk about what you would like to talk about. Otherwise, we're going to talk about what we want to talk about, which is going to be quite interesting given the state of the market and the state of politics and the state of everything right now. But unlike other shows that make you listen for several minutes before the lines are actually opened, ours are always open from the top of the show. And the first rule of the VanWee Financial Hour is that callers go directly on air unless I'm in the middle of a sentence that I won't remember to finish. How's that?
Seems fair to me.
All right. We will have a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. And this, like things that we talk about for the most part, will be directly related to the market because some really strange things are going on out there right now. And I think there are good reasons, but they're not valid reasons, if I may make that distinction. And we'll get into that as Adam does the market wrap. This whole thing that's coming up on Tuesday, I've never seen it. I've been around a long time, voted for a long time. I've never seen more contention, I don't know what the word is even.
Craziness?
Yeah, it's just, silly season's supposed to be in the primaries. Silly season now goes right up to election day.
And it's probably after, if I had to
probably
guess.
And it's going to result in the market making some moves. And Adam's got a piece today, and it is just an opinion piece. It's only his opinion. But what happens if A wins or B wins? What's going to thrive? What's going to not thrive? And we'll discuss that along the way, too. But for starters, this week was, I'm trying to think of a nice word, but I can't. So I'll just say, take it away.
Okay. Yeah, the topic on everybody's mind this week outside of the election is a 9-day losing streak in the S&P 500. Now, a 9-day losing streak isn't unheard of, but they don't happen very often. And when you hear our trivia question, you will learn a little bit more about that.
How about I'll throw it out right now?
Go for it.
What was the last year in which we had a 9-day losing streak in the S&P 500? That is our trivia question today.
All right, so call in if you want to guess. It's good for a $25 gift certificate to Publix from Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. So the areas that have shown the most weakness currently are healthcare and consumer discretionary. While technology and financials have held up better, not great, but better, the average stock in the S&P 500 is down over 14% from its 52-week high.
Yuck.
Yeah, that's pretty significant. So why is all that happening? Well, a lot of it can be traced right back to what I call the Wiener effect. Now, you might have the wrong idea, but it actually has to do with disgraced Congressman Anthony Wiener. And when the news came out a couple of weeks ago that the FBI was reopening the investigation into Hillary due to the information found on the computer belonging to Anthony Wiener, Trump pretty much started surging in the polls. Now, big leads for Hillary have all but disappeared in many key states, and Wall Street is pretty shocked by this. The problem with Trump isn't that he's anti-business, because he isn't, or anti-Wall Street, because he isn't. He just isn't in the pocket of the big banks like Hillary is, because he doesn't need them. He's already fabulously wealthy. He doesn't give $250,000 speeches to Goldman Sachs and things like that.
Yeah, they'll give him loans because he doesn't need it.
Exactly. He's just
unlike you folks.
He's just an unknown commodity to Wall Street, and he has no voting record at any level of government for us to go back and examine, and that just makes him a wild card in the eyes of Wall Street. So this is why so many Americans love him, but at the same time, Wall Street is scared to death of him. So for the week, based on that news, pretty much, we saw the Dow drop 1.4%, the S&P drop 1.9%, and the NASDAQ drop 2.8%. For the year, all three are still positive by only about 0.8 to 2.7%. And those numbers were significantly higher last quarter after this quarter has not gone well so far.
No.
The good news is that from the lows on February 11th of this year, the market is still up over 13%, which is pretty incredible considering how far down it's come in the last few weeks. With all that being said, I have to add that I think all this speculation over the presidency is pretty much junk. How much control does the president really have over our economy? Way less than the amount of credit that he or she would be given. It's a conundrum. It's kind of like oil prices. The president does not control oil prices, but everybody thinks that he has a magic lever where it just moves it up and down, and that's what you pay for gasoline. That's not how it works.
He can move it in the long run by axing some environmental regulations and getting the industry started up again.
Of course, but it takes years and years for mm-hmm. those types of things to pass and then be implemented and then actually work their way into the economy.
Yep.
So it just, the speculation we're seeing right now with the markets dropping based on who's going to be the president, I just don't think it's valid at all. The earnings season has now seen 1,943 companies report, and the earnings beat rate stands at 64%, which really isn't a bad number. Unfortunately, for the reasons I mentioned earlier, the market is trading on other news right now, not on earnings. The revenue beat rate is at 54%, which is just slightly weaker than last quarter and down significantly from a few weeks ago, but still not a historically terrible number.
Now, this wouldn't cause a sell-off in a normal market.
Yeah. There's a ton of economic data this week, and once again, it was pretty mixed. 12 reports came in weaker than expected, and 11 beat their expectations. One of the biggest ones was the non-farm payrolls. They missed expectations, which was a surprise to us. We actually thought they would beat significantly due to political factors.
I will be commenting on that jobs report shortly.
I figured.
It won't be pleasant.
It came in at 161,000 versus 173,000 forecasted. There were upward revisions to the two previous months, which kind of lessened the blow. And the unemployment rate dropped from 5% to 4.9%.
But smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, overall, just not a great report. We really were hoping for better.
Yeah, the whole jobs report, I've been through this pretty much on a monthly basis as these things have been reported. People look at them, and of course the complicit media makes it into whatever they want to make it into. If you want to call something good, you can. If you want to call something bad, you can. But if you want to tell the truth, you got to go by what's in the numbers and what underlies the numbers. And I'll get into that right after the break a little bit. It's far worse than we would expect just by looking at the numbers. And there's more implications coming on that, too, at the Federal Reserve, which is a big mover in the market and will continue to be so, especially after the election. Got to take a break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. Welcome back. to this very special Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
There is so much that's going to happen in the next few days, and it really depends very little on what happens on Tuesday. But some things will actually change. It just might not change Wednesday morning. It could take a little while for whatever happens to sink in, and that's if we know an answer on Wednesday morning. So Adam did a little thinking, and he wants to talk about what's going to thrive and what's not. But first, I want to just wrap up a little bit on the jobs report. You've probably heard in some of the media that it was really good, and we're right on track, and boom, 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 on and on. It stunk, people. It absolutely stunk. ADP, the private employer survey, came out with 147,000, and that was not a terrible number, and I tend to trust them a little bit because they're not a government agency. Then the establishment survey from BLS came out 161, which surprised Adam and me very much because we thought it was going to come out about 100,000 bigger than that because we figured for political purposes they're going to really, really push it. But apparently they couldn't, because underlying all that were some numbers that are real interesting. The first one is the household survey, also done by the BLS, and that showed a loss of 43,000 jobs. And that, folks, is really horrible, but it's made even more horrible when they add in their so-called CES birth-death adjustment, which is supposed to be something that will measure the number of people who start companies and hire people to the people who fail and lay people off. That was dismal. 197,000. I simply refer to those as made up jobs. This is not a report that would cause the Fed to go up, but the Fed's still talking about going up, and that's been the cause of a lot of our trouble. In keeping with our rules, good morning, Lee.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm just hunky dory. What's up today?
Hey, I just wanted to take a guess at the trivia question you had there.
Okay, shoot.
I'm guessing 1980.
Well, you are guessing correct.
Very good.
Well done.
Get it? Guessing
Thanks.
Correctly?
Huh. Pardon me?
It's a little sleight of tongue there. But anyway, you want a couple more little background things on that?
Certainly.
I'll give you a follow-up question, which is worth an attaboy if you get it right.
All right.
First off, what was happening in 1980?
The election, I would guess.
Mm-hmm. Between?
Reagan and, let's see. Reagan and... I forget the other guy's name.
Some peanut farmer from somewhere.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And the funny question, perhaps, is did this 9-day drop occur before the election or after?
I believe it was after.
You are correct. So when Ronald Reagan won the election in early November, the market took its 9-day drop starting on December 1st, which is just so counterintuitive, knowing the results of those 4 years or 8 years afterwards. But the market, A, does not like Republicans because Wall Street is full of Democrats, and two, hates uncertainty more than anything else. And they had no idea who this guy was or what he was up to or what he would be up to.
Sure.
So how did it turn out? Not too badly. The market for his 8 years was up around 118% overall. So
wow.
Once we found out that it wasn't so bad after all to cut taxes and such, things came up pretty well. We appreciate it. You have any other questions before I put you on hold?
Not at this time, no.
Thanks. All right, then I'll put you on hold, and the producer will get your address, and we'll send you out a little gift for getting it right. And thank you. We appreciate you listening. I really was kind of startled when I was looking this up this morning. No problem at all. Going back to 1980, that kind of made sense to me because that was the last time that we were in the kind of turmoil that we're in now. But it did surprise me that that happened as a result of the election instead of in anticipation of the election, because Carter was leading right up to Election Day.
Well, it may have something to do with the amount of available information back then versus today as well. The internet has made, as everybody knows, information is so readily available and public. And back then, it actually had
not
to sink
so
in before, I think, the market reacted a little bit more.
Absolutely true. But we're glad he got it right, and we'll carry on from here. All right, what happens if he wins? What happens if she wins, in your opinion?
Sure. The reason I thought to do this article is I had a client call this week and wanted to know what moves we should make in his portfolio before the election. And it's a really tough question because we honestly don't know at this point who's going to win. So making moves based on what we think could go the exact opposite way. So we actually decided to not do much. I mean, we've made
that would have been my advice.
Real small moves, but I don't think it's really tough when you you don't know which way it's going to go. So anyways,
One thing I don't think will happen is no matter what, the next day the market shoots straight up. I don't believe that'll happen. That's the only thing that I've ruled out. And even that has a percentage chance of being wrong.
Yeah,
it could shoot straight up.
It really could.
Yeah? I just don't think so.
So for this analysis, I really tried to take personal feelings out of it as much as possible and just look at what I think will happen based on who wins. So the most obvious one, the one that jumped off the page to me, was healthcare and biotech. Now, that sector, I think that if Trump wins, will be a buy. And I think if Hillary wins, it will be a sell. Because Hillary has been really open about criticizing the valuations and pricing in biotech. And in fact, the current biotech slump is partially attributed to a series of tweets that she published about the sector being overvalued. And on the healthcare side, a Trump win probably means a shift in healthcare towards a less regulated marketplace. And conversely,
Yay.
If Hillary wins, I think you'll see more government regulation and possibly a move further towards a single-payer system. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's going to be good for the companies involved in that space.
Nor for the people involved.
Probably not. The next one is utilities. I think if you see a Trump win, that's an area to buy. And if you see a Hillary win, we should sell. And utilities are a sector that's known for being boring and reliable. And it's also seen a fair share of controversy under the Obama administration over the environmental issues. So a Hillary win could see further government regulations surrounding coal, an industry that has been largely destroyed in America over the last 8 years, and other forms of energy production that are deemed to have environmental impacts. A Hillary win could also mean that Wall Street would rally, which usually results in a shift away from the safe sectors like utilities. Mm-hmm. A Trump win could see Wall Street go into cautious mode where utilities tend to thrive. Mm-hmm. And a Trump win could also mean opening back up the coal industry as well as less government regulation, which would be a good thing for utilities.
I agree.
All right, consumer cyclical. A Trump win, I would say buy, and a Hillary win, I would say sell. The consumer cyclical sectors where consumer goods and services that are dependent on the economy being strong are categorized. They tend to do well when people, and especially the wealthy, have more money to spend. Think housing, entertainment, automobiles, etc. Hillary's plan is to raise taxes on the wealthy, raise the inheritance tax, raise capital gains, and then offer specific tax credits to lower income earners. I don't see any way that her plan can benefit the consumer cyclical sector. Trump's plan would lower taxes on the wealthy, and when the wealthy have more cash, they tend to go out and spend it on items that fall in this category. So that's my reasoning behind that one. Hmm? Consumer defensive, I think, are a buy under both. I put a buy rating on Trump for the perceived safety factor of these types of companies, and on Hillary, I put the same rating because I think that these stocks will rise with the market if she gets elected. Energy, I put a hold on both of these for both parties. The energy, it's kind of a toss-up. I always tell people that the president has way less control on the price of oil than the American people think. Under Hillary, you would be certain that the environmental regulations on energy companies would increase. She is also has a track record of going after them for what, quote-unquote, windfall profits. That's basically a term that politicians have made up to attack industries they don't like. She would most likely not approve any new pipelines, much like her predecessor. What I worry about under Trump, though, is his desire to manufacture in America. Is if he's including the energy industry in that, it would mean we would have to depend on largely on fracking to produce our oil, which is a very high-cost method of obtaining oil relative to drilling. So this could actually affect what we pay for gas. Even though we're producing it here, it's much cheaper to buy it from places like Saudi Arabia, who can drill for $20 a barrel or something like that.
Oil yeah, they've got a really low break-even point. It might be less than that. I think they make a profit at 20.
That's possible. Oil is a commodity that's traded on a global market by global companies, so a move of the Trump nature by trying to do more American could really disrupt the prices in the energy industry. And then industrials, for Trump, I would say buy and Hillary sell. This one's pretty easy. Trump wants to bring manufacturing back to the U.S., whereas Hillary supports union, higher minimum wages, and pretty much every other reason that manufacturing has moved out of the U.S. in the last 30 years. So I think that those types of companies, especially American companies, would thrive under Trump. versus Hillary. Financials, I have Trump as a hold and Hillary as a buy. I think it's pretty clear which candidate has the support of the big banks on Wall Street. It's the one that gives the $250,000 for them to give speeches, and the other one doesn't need their money at all. That being said, I think financials will benefit from rising interest rates under either candidate because that seems almost inevitable at this point.
Well, where are you going to go from where we are? Unless you adopt the negative theory, which God save us if we do.
Yeah. I think real estate slightly favors Trump just because he comes from the industry. He's probably a little bit more pro-real estate than Hillary. Although under Hillary, I really don't think that real estate will suffer any. I just think that Trump is a little bit more pro.
It may be in that a lot of people are going to get their pockets picked a little bit more, but that would be more of a long-term effect on the margin rather than
But a lot of the people that don't currently own real estate are lower income, and her plan clearly favors
and
lower income people.
It.
Yeah, so I think either way they're going to be okay. And the last two are materials and communications, and I don't see any clear differentiators there.
Yeah, I don't either. We're in the communication mode as a country, and we're going to stay that way. I would add maybe to that domestic east-west railroads, which ought to thrive if we bring manufacturing and energy back.
True.
So I'd look at locally, CSX should benefit. All right, got to take a break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open. Anything you would like to talk about, just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. It has been an interesting week. It will be an interesting week with all that's going on out there. And, of course, as little as we try to, or let's say as much as we try to avoid political stuff, you can't really take it out of the equation when the market is already reacting to something it doesn't even know yet, and it will continue to react for a while. I still say that doing absolutely nothing between now and then is probably the best advice you can get or give at this point, because I can't figure out what the heck else I would do.
Yeah, it's a good point. And this is a economic and financial show, but this will probably be our most political show of the year just because the election is next week. After that, we'll get back to your finances.
Right. And along those lines, I had one little funny one I'd like to bring up for people. You hear a lot about whose economic plan is better than who else's economic plan. And there's a lot of people out there that are saying that Hillary's plan will create a lot more growth and a lot more jobs and that kind of thing. And they like to lean on the, quote, conservative Republican economist Mark Zandi of Moody's. That's what Schumer and company refer to him. That's how they refer to him. There's just a couple little problems with that. First off, he's a lifelong registered Democrat, and second, he's a Keynesian, and he's most often compared to Paul Krugman, and if you know anything about Krugman, I call him the Joe Biden of economics. He's been at it a lifetime, and he has yet to get anything right. I just thought I'd throw that up. I'll tell you, I got a whole article that I might actually do, I'm not sure, about what happens when taxes are actually cut, what is the result. It works every single time it's tried, and the people are in denial about it. But if we do get our taxes cut, look out, folks.
Yeah, economists are to me, should be more like what Supreme Court justices should be. They're supposed to take the political side out of it,
right,
come up with theories, and then look at the facts based on research that dictate what they should do. But it just doesn't happen these days. Everybody's got a political slant, it seems like.
Economics is often referred to as the dismal science, and they have earned it. It's often said that most good economists have predicted 9 out of the last 4 recessions. And that's, you know, we had a call last week, I guess, about the thing you read probably more often than anything is there's an 80% market crash coming, which is probably the stupidest headline of the month.
And also funny because if you read the article, the first sentence says it's actually a 50%.
Right. There are certain websites you don't get your information from if you want to stay sane. One of them is called The Sovereign Investor, although even they got one right last week. I was shocked.
What was that?
I can't remember what the topic was, but I noted in my little pea brain that oh my gosh, the Sovereign Investor site got one right. It was just a one-page thing, and it was so obvious that it would be hard to get it wrong. But, wow, still, I give credit where it's due, right? All right, Adam, you wanted to we're going to throw out another trivia question. I can't promise anybody anything for winning it. I'll give you an attaboy or an attagirl, and maybe Adam will come up with a little something else to throw along your way, too. But I don't think anybody's going to get it anyway, are they?
No, it's a tough one, and it really surprised me. That's why I wanted to do
it. Yeah, we love trivia questions that we don't know the answer to, so we have to go find it, because then we learn something out of it. Then you try to go back and analyze the why, and it's not always easy, to tell you the truth.
This one is kind of funny. So there are 20 cities that make up the Case-Shiller Housing Index, and what I want to know is which one has seen the least amount of price appreciation from its housing bubble lows. And these are all major U.S. cities, all 20 of them. So if you go and Google the Case-Shiller Housing Index, it'll give you a list of all 20. And I want to know which one has seen the least
price appreciation. I did not get it, nor would I get it today.
No, I would not have guessed this one
either. So think a little off the wall or something. All right, here till the end of the year. Of course, it's that time of year when we start thinking about taxes and planning, that sort of thing. One of the things that you have to do before December 31 is required minimum distributions. Now, we all know from listening to this show every week, that so many of you hopefully do, that about 10,000 or so baby boomers are turning 65 every day. That's been going on now. This is the fifth year of it. Which means one thing. It means that the earliest baby boomers are turning 70, and those born in the first half of that year are turning 70 and a half. 70 and a half is that magic age at which required minimums are forced down our throats by the tax people who think that it's about time you pay up on some of this stuff. You can't do it at the last minute because it takes a little while between you and the custodian and that sort of thing. And you need to do a little planning. As investment advisors with clients, come November 1, we pull out the files and we start going through them from A to Z and seeing who has, who hasn't, who needs more, who turned 70 and a half. And I think it's a very egregious mistake to make if you don't prod the people and get this done one way or the other, because the penalties are very severe. So if you were born,
possibly the largest tax penalty out there that I know of.
It's the biggest one I know of. If you were born on or before the year 1946, that means you are, unless it's the second half of 46, you are, I hate to use the word eligible for RMDs or required minimum distributions, because eligible sounds good and you have to. With an exception that, of course, we'll come back to later, that, again, is part of the planning process. So the process of paying what the people up in D.C. like to call your fair share is called the required minimum distribution, and the key word in there is R for required. I guess the other word would be M for minimum. You can take out more, but you don't have to. They want your money. You've had it long enough without paying any taxes on it, so they're going to get it one way or the other. And the penalty for not doing that is 50% of the amount not withdrawn. And, of course, when you add in regular taxes to the 50%, that means you really lost a bundle.
A lot.
And if you're working with an advisor and that advisor doesn't prod you to get this done, I would really consider picking up the phone and dialing 685-1505, which is, of course, the main number to VanWe Financial. Anyway, I digress. Ordinary income tax plus 50%. Wow. So knowing you're required to take it is only the beginning of the process. Knowing the rules can help you plan for a smoother retirement and a minimal amount of disruption in not only your cash flow, but in your taxes and in your accounts. It is never our job, as we see it, to tell you exactly what to do. Our job here, as I've always believed it anyway, is to tell you what can be done so that you can look at your own situation, apply the rules, or get some help to apply those rules. So I'm going to start out with some vocabulary words. Let's start with qualified. Qualified means that taxes are not currently assessed to the money. They're postponed until a later date, and that date is very often the RMD date. A retirement account means any one of company-sponsored or individually owned accounts that are qualified. Roth refers to a number of different account types that are not generally taxed in either direction, meaning they're taxed first, but when your money goes into the Roth, it is not, it's done after taxes, so it's not taxable when it comes out, and the growth, so far, is not taxable either. Traditional refers to retirement accounts that provide a current tax deduction to the owner or participant. Money that comes out of a traditional account later on is then taxed at the time. And that goes for both what you put in and what the growth is on it. Owners are individuals who start and maintain their own retirement accounts. Participants generally refer to employees of an organization that sponsors a group retirement account. Custodian refers to the company that actually holds the funds for you and does it, your investing for you at your own direction. That means they buy and sell the investments as you direct or your advisor directs, such as equities, bonds, mutual funds, and exchange-traded funds. There is an exception for some accounts called the still-working exception, and I will get to that shortly. Now, because the music's playing, I'm not going to get into the meat of this thing right away, but I'm going to tell you how you can take your required minimum distribution the neatest way possible for you to not disrupt the investments in your account. There are things you can do. There are things that you can't do. And if you know the rules, you can make them, as always, you can make them apply to your situation in a manner that's going to best suit you. So after the break, we'll come back, and I'm going to have Adam tell everybody how to reach us for our day jobs, and we're going to wrap up some rules on RMDs. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the final segment on this wonderful Saturday in Jacksonville. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour, and I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here to talk about whatever you want to talk about. So just give us a call, 222-TALK. It's 222-8255. We're talking about, among other things, required minimum distributions, starting what will be pretty much a long process of talking about tax things between now and December. But we all know the rules, and the rules are callers first. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning. I'm a little worried because I have a 403, or I don't know what it's called.
The 403B?
Yeah, something like that. It's the post office. And I've got about 5 years before I'm going to retire and 10 years before I want to start taking the money out. But I've been worried about hearing about the stock market crash and the bond market crash. So I don't know what percentage to put my money in.
Well, you said that you're not going to touch any of this money for 10 years if you get your way, right?
Right, but I don't want to. Last time in 2008, it took me like 5 or 6 years to recover back to where I was. So I don't want to be put in that position again.
Well, why not? I'm curious. You had time to wait.
Okay, well, one thing I left out, I might want to touch it before then. I might want to touch it when I'm 65, so that would only be 5 years.
That makes a big
difference.
But
I'm going to try to hold off for 10 years.
Okay, well, first off, 5 years is the absolute minimum time when you're dealing with market investments. If your money's going to be needed within 5 years, and you could argue that 5 years is within 5 years.
Yes.
Right at the margin, but you could. Right. And that, if you can't do that, then you owe it to yourself to keep that money fairly safe. Now, you are giving up the upside. You know that. What if the market doubles in that time?
That would be bad luck for me.
It would be?
But it would be worse luck, I think, if it went 50 the other way. And,
I don't know what options you have in your 403B. Generally, they're pretty limited.
Yeah, there's a S&P 500, a small cap, an international, a bond fund, and a G fund, which is just all government securities. And then there's some target funds, which
I love all of those for different reasons. if I were you, I would probably stick at least half of it just in the G fund and let it ride, maybe even 60%.
Yeah.
Agree with that?
One thing you have to think about is that you're talking about the 403B as a whole, but really when you say you might touch it in 5 years, you're not talking about taking it all out in 5 years. You're talking about taking a portion of it out. So that portion is the one you really need to be concerned about, and I absolutely agree. Put it in the G fund and just get the minimal return, but sleep better at night.
Yep. At least 50 or 60%. You could do it all, but you're giving up any potential upside. My thought is maybe you do 10% in a long target date fund, maybe 2040, maybe 10% in the S&P, 10% international, or 5%. Any numbers like that where you have some assets in there that given time will probably go up, but you've got somewhere between 50, 60, even 70, 75% in G fund. Whatever makes you comfortable. I just hate to see you give up 100% of the ability to even edge up a little bit if the market does take off in that time. But remember, it's about what you said, sleeping at night. That is your overriding consideration. Nothing else matters if you can't sleep.
Right.
And if that means 100% in G, do it.
Yeah, if it were to stop today and not ever gain another penny, at least the money that I have, I think that I could do pretty well with, considering I have a pension plus Social Security, too.
So. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, if it's going to be that way, you might rethink once you go on your pension, or you might rethink next year, for that matter. What if the market does drop 30, 40, 50%, and all of a sudden it starts turning up? Maybe you want to react. But if it's going to make all the difference to your comfort, just put it all in the G fund and forget about it.
Because I've been reading a lot that the market's overvalued right now, but I'm trying to find out how they figure that out.
Yeah, by some metrics you could say it's high. By other metrics you could say it isn't. It depends what your business outlook is.
Many, many times when you see that, they're talking about price to earnings ratios, and they are historically on the high side right now.
Yeah.
By the way, they said 90% of the government employees are voting for Trump. I guess I'm one of the 10%. I mean, are voting for Hillary.
Yeah.
I'm not voting.
I figured what you meant because you listened to the show.
Yeah.
I'd rather vote for the squirrel I just saw running across the road than Hillary.
Do what's best for you. There is a lot of uncertainty right now, but think about keeping a little bit, even if it's just 10%, in something, some equity-based thing that if it goes up, you at least get to participate a little. And if that doesn't feel good to you, then go with your gut. You can't go wrong when you go with your gut.
Yeah, especially sounds like you're pretty set between the pension and the 403B. So.
Yeah, you know that there's only two things people fear more than dying. One of them is public speaking, and the other one is running out of money. You can practice the public speaking. You can't practice the running out of money.
Good.
In fact, here's something Tennessee Williams said. You can be young without money, but you can't be old without it. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, that is.
I keep a little list of all these sayings for times like this right in front of me at all times on the show. That one sounds just like you right there.
Yeah.
I appreciate the call. Did you want to guess which city has housing that has recovered the least from the crash?
Say Las Vegas, Nevada.
That's an excellent guess.
That was my guess, but it was wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
But thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
All right, bye.
Bye. Cheryl, good morning.
Hi there.
What's happening today?
I'll guess Jacksonville.
Well, that's a really good guess, but it isn't. Our housing has actually done very well around here.
Yeah, it's actually not. They don't include Jacksonville, Tampa, and Miami, I believe.
They got to be really big cities?
Yeah, really, because there's only 20.
But we have recovered more than the city in question anyway.
Yes, we have.
But we appreciate the guess. All right, take care. Thanks for listening. Yeah, I really don't think anybody's going to get it. It just shocked me like crazy. All right. Might have to put off RMDs a little bit just due to time, but I'm not going to put off telling the people who we are.
Sure. We are fee-only independent financial planners located in Jacksonville Beach. And being fee-only means that we don't sell anything. We don't make commissions off anything. The only way that we make money is by giving our advice to our clients. And Independent means that we aren't aligned with anyone. We are completely independent of any large company, any mutual fund company, any ETF company. So
we do use Charles Schwab as custodian only.
Correct.
They do our bidding, nothing else.
That is correct. We pay them for, well, our clients pay them for their making trades and things like that, but they don't pay any other types of fees or commissions. So that's what all those words mean. And we're located right off the Marsh Landing Parkway, exit of Butler Boulevard, so we're easy to get to from all points in the city. No excuses if you live on the west side or somewhere else just because we're at the beach.
Okay, quick, the website, and then we'll take a call.
The website is www.vanweefinancial.com, and lots of good stuff on there. Check back often.
Okay, cool. Good morning, Larry.
Just quick guess, gentlemen. New York?
You got it.
You got an attaboy.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm into that.
I honestly did not think anybody would get that.
Me neither. And it's only up 17%. And guess which one saw the most price appreciation from the lows?
I don't know.
I'll tell you. It's San Francisco at 95%.
Wow. So,
yeah.
Wow.
But I just couldn't believe you just hear about New York real estate.
It's a beautiful city.
It is. It's
Man, I wouldn't want to live there.
Yeah, it's a little crazy, but...
Yeah, a little goofy, but you got it. You can spend a lot of attaboys, but don't go very far with it.
That's all right. Makes me feel better.
Oh, great. We appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Gentlemen.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I've honestly wouldn't have gotten that one.
No, you see all the shows on TV and the New York prices just seem to go up.
Well,
and up
the
and
speculation
up.
That we had last week when we first started talking about this was maybe it didn't drop that much.
It might be that. But
you know, Manhattan especially is pretty confined,
landlocked.
You know, buy land, they quit making it.
Yeah, but New York's so big, and the other boroughs make up so much of it.
Yeah, it's strange. Anyway, I'll get back to RMDs and such next week. But I'll give you a little outline of what we want to talk about. If you have more than one account, let's say first off, you have only one account. You've got a traditional IRA. It's easy. You look up the factor, you look up the balance from last December 31st, you divide, and that's how much money you got to take out. Just that simple. But life gets more complicated when you have a variety of different types of accounts, including possibly SEP IRA, simple IRA, 401k, 403b, 457b, and that sort of thing. There are rules that govern what you can combine and what you can't combine, and I'm going to run through them next week and tell you how to do a little bit of tax planning. Unfortunately, we are running out of time for today. Thanks, everybody, for listening, for calling. We appreciate it. We'll see you next week at the same time. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.